first monthly meeting of the Port of Port Townsend Commission to order.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Does anyone have any additions to the agenda?
There's just to be noted, there are two agenda pages. The second addendum moves the Point Hudson reservation policy to business. That's the only change.
What about adding the new building contract to the executive session?
Well, I think we'll have to do that. You know, we've got the administrative building bids under old business D, but I'm sure we're going to have to go have an executive session on that. Yeah.
Okay, so then there'll be an executive session pursuant to RCW 42-30.110G and a discussion of the new building contract?
That's right, and I. That's a fair rep,
aye. All right. Then I move that we approve the agenda as written.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Consent agenda. Approval of meeting minutes February 27th. Is there any additions or corrections to the meeting minutes? And the operations report. Any discussion on the operations report?
No, just looked like the big mall's doing good.
Yeah, no kidding. Then does anybody want to make a motion to approve?
Yeah, I'll make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Public comments not related to the agenda. No public comments. Then on to old business. Item A, the airport rate discussion.
Jim?
As you're aware, and I forward on to you Eric's email, been working with Eric for some time on kind of trying to resolve perception of inequity at the airport, basically. First step was for Terry and I to go out and measure every building at the airport so we knew what we were talking about. It was interesting in the measurements because we've had developers say, I'm going to build a 10,000 square foot building. It's actually 11,215. So there was some discrepancies in how things were built out. So now we have filed and notarized the exact dimensions of all. Sent that to Eric. And he wanted to forward the agenda and talk about it with the commission because I told him basically staff has no jurisdiction over rates. We cannot set rates. So this is a discussion that has to be solved by the commission. So this is the first in whatever we're going to do as far as discuss where we're at. I provided for you a spreadsheet that's in the packet that basically shows those square footage of all the hangars, what they're paying monthly, the square footage. I converted the what they're paying monthly to a per square foot per month fee. For instance, if you look across your sheet, A hangar is 20,188 feet. That's 4.38 cents per square foot per month. Now that does not include leasehold tax, but we don't get leasehold tax. That's like sales tax goes right to the state. This is just what ports charges are for that. I also broke out for you. As you're aware, when we started the new development at the airport, because the FAA was funding less and less, we were requiring the new developers to pay more and more. So I've highlighted in yellow for you the four hangars that were required to pay infrastructure charges just for the right to build it. So I wanted to make sure that if we're comparing a level playing field, you need to know that Warren Erickson, for instance, paid $8,000 just for the right to build on the airport before he could do anything. Northwest Hangars paid $126,000 in infrastructure charges, something that none of the other hangars had to do. So just want to make sure that was out there in public. But that's all staff has.
Then I would like to give the airport hangar tenants opportunity to speak to their wishes on this issue. Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, I'm Eric Taylor. I'm the president of the A Hangar Condo Association, and I kind of started this ball rolling. My concern now, and for quite some years now, is that the lease rates are kind of all over the place. In 2001, the port commissioned a market rent study by an outside consultant to determine a fair rate, fair for the port, fair for the tenants, to be applied to, as I understood it, to all the hangar leases. This was in 2001. We, the A Hangar Association got a port policy adjustment in 2001, which amounted to a 37% increase. And basically after that, the ball seemed to have been dropped, and none of the others were really brought up to that same rate, which was, I believe, 43 cents per square foot per year. As a result, you can look at the spreadsheet here. It didn't quite do all the math. I totaled up the square footage and the amounts, and the average is 0.048 per month, but you've got a high of 0.0478, which is the L hangar, and a low of 0.0387, which is the J hangar. Okay, that's a 22% spread. The spreadsheet's actually incomplete. It does not show the Jeffco hangar, and they pay $370 a month, and they have, near as I could figure, 11,393 square feet. I measured it recently, and they're at 0.0325 per square foot. So that throws the spread out to 37%, which I kind of thought a public agency is supposed to treat everybody fairly and evenly, as well as the FAA having requirements when they fund an airport for fair and equal treatment, and a 37% spread doesn't seem fair and equal to me. The other part of the issue is the constant increases. I had a meeting with Mr. Pivarnik in January, and he told me that lease rates are generally predicated on fair market value. Okay, our lease rates have basically done nothing but go up. And if you're a property owner here, you know that starting about 2008 or 9, property values plummeted. They're still not up to where they were. In my opinion, airport property has probably plummeted even worse because of the state of general aviation. You guys don't do the fuel sales anymore, but I believe you get a flowage fee. Is that correct? Okay. Well, I would suggest you take a look at what the fuel sales are now versus 10 years ago. General aviation is not a growth industry. It's in decline. That means demand is down, and to me, that means the fair market value is down. And I don't think the rate should keep going up. So what I'm suggesting is do the math, come up with the average rate, determine the average rate, and establish that as a rate for everybody. And then the second half of that suggestion is put a cap on the rate for the time being, perhaps 3 years or 5 years until the economy improves and hopefully general aviation improves. There is a clause in our lease that's been referred to at these meetings. It's on the item number 3 in our lease, the A hangar lease, and it says establish the initial lease payment per month. And the second half of the clause says the rental rate shall be adjusted every 3 years to the prevailing port rate formally approved by the Port Commission for all comparable port property. The third part of that clause goes on to talk about the consumer price index adjustment. Okay, what is the prevailing port rate? It's referenced very clearly here in the lease, and I don't believe there is a prevailing port rate. So I guess to sum it up, I would like to see that established. Using the average of the rates worked for me, and then I'd like to see a cap put on it. Thank you.
Any questions?
She's got one.
Go ahead.
The last time I stood before you, I held out to you that you have a field of dreams out there. That's just what this airport is. It's the American right to dream, to fly, to build, to follow those dreams. behind the doors of each of those hangars, you'll see that most of the aircraft there, each one of you has a car that costs me. Every single one of you. I guarantee it. Yep.
He doesn't.
My hat's off to you. And you know what I'm saying? Behind your garage door lays an airplane to be. Because we are not rich folk out there. Yes, there are a few deep pockets. It's not the majority. We have another problem at the airport. It's the continuation of rising costs. When especially when you haven't addressed the taxes on it. Mine doubled this year where the house went down, but they didn't lower our value of the hangars any. So there again, we're missing some more. We're just getting nickel. And now they're talking about, the FAA's talking about landing fees, usage fees. I think you also have to note that about a quarter of the airport has aged and gone on, and there aren't any new pilots to take their place. Why? When my brother took his flying lessons, back when he was 18, it was $300. When I took my flying lessons when I was 40, it was $3,000. Right now, a new pilot, which are 18 to 20 years old, if they're going to be airline pilots, it's $15,000 just to get a private license, not the ATP or any further tickets or add-on certificates. And then we have the cost of the medical each year. This all adds up. It's not just you, but your airport, if you really pay attention to it, is not only stacked, it has backed any of your projections. You may have new buildings out there, but those were the deep pockets that wanted to build a little bigger and better, and a lot of them are empty. A lot of them are empty. And I think it's a real travesty because I see this dream threshold really going down. The availability to do it, this lease here is part of that. So if I may get back to the issue at hand. I figured out the average rate per year sheet, and it's 0.419 per square foot. There, too, I need to reiterate, too, in 2001, there was an agreement to equalize. That has not been done by the agency, ladies and gentlemen. That has not been done, and that is a travesty. You've had 12 years to take care of that. Where is it? You've dropped the ball, literally. And that isn't respectful or saying much for
you. Care of what?
To equalize the rents to adjust them all to where they all come out to everyone's paying the same square footage.
Now, when was this?
In 2001.
2001.
There was an amendment to our leasehold agreements that everything would be recalculated to a current port lease rate. Every single hangar, and that was not followed through on.
And so that 2001 language you're referring to, equalizing the lease, was in your lease, but it wasn't. Was that?
It was in everybody's leases, and I even have a notarized page here for it, signed by Larry Crockett.
That could be.
And that is your phone, gentlemen. I'm sure you've forgotten it. I don't say things glibly up here, believe me. I will back up my words.
Excuse me, could you say your name for the...
Oh, I am Marilyn Haight, H-O-E-F-T, and I'm in the L hangar, and I'm the highest one out there.
Really, you're high?
Yes, and every single... No, I should be down at the bottom of the barrel. I'm retired. I have a little plane, and there's no jet or twin engines behind any of our doors in the L hangar. I assure you that. And most of them are tail draggers or 172s, which you can buy or trail safe. Or
no, I remember this was only for L hangar. We adjusted your rate down because you were really high.
Yes, well, we still are. We still are that.
I know,
and the cost of living, which brings me back to the cost of living, is the fact that he's right. In the original lease, it says it's not to be raised except for every 3 years. And we've had an every single year increase, every single year. And I've even called and they said, oh no, we have to go by the thing. Even when the CPI went down for the state, just because they picked out a city of Seattle, Tacoma, which is not here, you contended that you could raise it based on something that's not even relevant to the way we live here. You just seem to want to pull a city out of the hat so you can raise it that got a plus that year. I don't know. But anyway, every year is illegal according to what you promised and what we agreed to and what has been signed and notarized. I have my original lease here. And it should only be done every 3 years. I mean, these are not hard contracts to understand for you to follow. And may I ask, why haven't they been followed? I mean, this is ABC, real simple. And I know each of you are intelligent. So why isn't this being adhered to?
Do you agree that the leases have not been adhered to?
They've been adhered to exactly to the letter of the lease. The CPI is independent. That's a federally mandated Seattle, Tacoma, Bermuda. We don't pick that. That's federal government picks.
No, the federal government, I called you. I'm sorry, I interrupted you. But I did call you, and we did notate two different schedules, one for the federal, one for the state, and one for Seattle, Tacoma, and all three were different. They do not eat. And I know this because I'm an accountant.
We go by the Seattle, Tacoma, Bremerton CPI in all of our leases across the board for all four properties, all of us have. And that has not gone down. I think this year it's, what, running another 2.7%, give or take?
Well, you don't have a prevailing court rate.
Yeah, what we did on that was we brought you back down to the court rate, which was 48 cents. And the commission has chosen to leave it at that rather than changing it ever since that was first done back in 2002.
That was 2001.
Would the fact that these leases for the hangars are signed at different times have anything to do with the disparity in rates?
Well, the issue that Eric brought up with Jeffco is that issue. Jeffco was the first hangar built. They had a special lease and we can do about it. We are following the lease for the letter of the law, and we are paying less. But there's nothing we can do.
Our hangar was the third to the last to be built. But the hangar that was built after us is 7 cents.
Less than yours?
Less than ours.
Which one is that?
The new
one.
It's the Northwest hangars. Excuse me, that's 8 cents lower. They're at 0.39.
Again, you're in which hangar?
I'm in the L hangar.
Okay, I see a difference there right now, and that's that the L hangar didn't have to have any upfront infrastructure charge. And the NW hangar, is that the one?
Neither of the hangars preceding us had any infrastructure charge either. Only the ones after us did.
And then the one that you're saying that was built after you that is 8 cents less, is that the Northwest hangar one? Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, they had $126,000 infrastructure charge.
Okay, but they're the only ones that, as you can see, the ones that did are lower, but the other ones were still the highest, and we're before the infrastructure hangars or the newer ones are built. We're the last built, except for K. K was built after us, and it's 41 cents.
Can I say something? I can't stand. Well, no, we talked to the guys that built the hangars, and this was before Larry Crockett. The port commissioner then got mad at Leo and Neil building the hangars. He wanted them to only build hangars for rentals, and they said no because they got people to buy the hangars they want. Do it this way. So if he threatened them and said that, well, you're going to pay a higher lease rate then, and he jacked up the lease rate on that one. That's when we first went to Larry afterwards, and Larry went just back for us to adjust that. But that was what happened was the previous port commissioner got mad, so he says, well, you're going to pay more for that. And that's what happened.
Could you state your name, please?
Kent Haft. I'm the president of the L Hangar.
Eric?
I'd like to point out the infrastructure cost is the highlighted ones on your spreadsheet. And those are all the newer hangars on the east end of the airport. The west end hangars, actually, we did pay infrastructure costs, at least part of them, as the developer, as part of this development. For example, a guy named Vic Gray was a developer on the A hangar condo and the G hangar. And he actually did some storm drains and taxiway work as part of his development. And he was partially reimbursed for some taxiway costs after the fact. So, I mean, if you want to talk about infrastructure, the port didn't charge us a fee way back then. And this is back in 1996. And I wasn't involved with the developing. I didn't buy my hangar till 98. So I don't have all the facts.
So we're not reimbursing any of these dollars.
Excuse me?
We're not reimbursing the developers for these dollars, these new hangars.
No, no, you're charging the developers those dollars. Well, they are paying you because as part of the taxiway work you had done included infrastructure that Vic Gray included as part of his development.
Which we paid him back for.
Well, he was partially repaid on taxiways. I don't remember hearing anything about any other infrastructure.
This isn't for taxiway. This is for water, stormwater.
Power.
It's for power. It's had nothing to do with taxiways.
All the stuff, infrastructure we had to extend.
Okay. Well, now who put in all the electrical and stuff down to them developments?
We did.
On the west end. Now, you were here.
We were.
Well, on the west end of the airport.
Yeah, anyway.
Well, so you don't know if Vic did it or if the port did it. Another issue is that there's already power going down to the I hangar building. So there was already power running right down through that area. The east end power had to be brought in from quite a ways away up on the ramp, like up at the museum. So you're kind of comparing apples and oranges.
Not really. Yeah, we paid for an extension and upgrade of the fire flow ramp first got from 6-inch to 10-inch and 8-inch lines per the fire marshal's requirements,
mm-hmm.
which you guys all benefited from. You
mm-hmm.
didn't have to pay a penny for that. These four new hangars had to pay all that.
Well, I don't have my entire lease with me. It addresses fire flow, and it says the port will provide fire flow, blah, 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 by a certain date. It's back about halfway through the lease. So it didn't say anything about the port shall provide it at extra cost. It says the port shall provide it.
Now we're just talking about equity here and all the hangars out there. And, you know, and your time element to the question is just like every lease here in the Boat Haven.
They're unequal because they're signed at different times.
Right. If you were to sign a lease this year and I sign a lease next year, even if we started at the same rate, you would have had a year of CPI applied.
Already.
By the time I signed mine, so you're going to have a higher lease rate than I do for a similar lease.
Well, as chairman of the commission, I can certainly understand your angst, and I understand the situation the general aviation is in for all.
And that's a big concern, believe me.
Have you had a look at our airport budget document?
Oh, yeah, I got a copy of the profit and loss statement for last year.
Yeah.
Well, when you first look at it, if I can have the floor again. Let me find it here. You first look at it, bottom line for last year, according to this, the airport lost $267,425.
So even if you take the depreciation line off that, which to me
$9,000 in the hole.
$31,000.
Not according to the numbers I have here, sir. Net income lost $259,668. Depreciation expense $250,644. That's $9,024, I think.
Yeah, I don't know what document that is you have there, but if I look at the current budget report for 2012, it shows a $31,000 loss after you eliminate the depreciation line. So we have that issue to deal with also.
Well, there's what I have that I just got from the port last week.
Right, so where do you come up with $9,000?
Bottom line, I think, on those two. Boss 259.
Right.
Actual. Boss
right.
2.
But how about last year's what I'm talking about?
This is last year, 2012. 259,
250. So it's still a loss. It's not as much as the year after it, but it's still a loss. So we're struggling with that at the airport also. You know, because just like you folks feel that you would enjoy some relief in your rent structure, the folks at our other facilities feel like they would like some relief in their rent structures also, because they say that they're supporting other entities of the port, you know. So we do have a challenge. I mean, if we were to reduce the rents in those hangars, it would make it more difficult for us to operate this business that we have here in black.
We're asking that they be equalized.
Which would mean a reduction, or would you have us raise the other people's up to the highest?
It needs to be taken on an average of equal.
It could mean a lot of hangars are going to increase.
I'm just as angry that we didn't get what we had been promised in 2001. We're still the highest of 12 years running.
Eric?
Well, that's why I know I came before the court commission about a year ago, and pretty much the same deal. Oh, we can't afford to cut rates, or we can't afford this or that. That's why my proposal suggests using the average rate and applying it to everybody. Maybe it ain't a cut. Okay, it's kind of a two-pronged proposal. The cap, which is a separate issue, capping the rates, and then using the average to set a new official rate. If our rates are going to keep going up, if that's how it has to be, I guess we'll live with it. But I would like to see equal rates. I know my port lease, like I said, shall be adjusted every 3 years to the prevailing port rate formally approved by the Port Commission for all property. About 2 minutes ago, Larry Crockett said the approved port rate is 48 cents a square foot a year. So is that the prevailing port rate? Well, every 3 years,
we've elected not to change it.
Okay.
The commission has.
Well, I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but I read the lease as saying that every 3 years that our rate should be adjusted to that 48 cent figure.
No, it's not.
It says CPI will be applied every year. You're forgetting that next sentence.
Well, which one's which?
It will be applied.
Actually, it's in italics on mine, like an afterthought. So do we throw the every third year part out?
No, that's if we're going to do a port policy adjust, a major change, that's when that
every
happen.
3 years.
Every 3 years.
That hasn't
says
happened,
we will
sir.
We have a CPI every year.
Okay.
We got to make sure that statement's in that same.
Well, when is this every 3 year deal going to happen?
They've opted not to change it.
At the discretion of the commission, yeah.
And we've done the same with, we got the same rules with the Boat Haven, the Point Hudson, and Cool Seam.
Well, I don't reading as saying to the new prevailing rate. It just says to the prevailing rate. I guess that's at the heart of my questioning. I don't understand.
There seems to be a prevailing rate for each hangar unit.
Well, it doesn't say that either. It says for all comparable port property.
Prevailing rate was established so that as new leases are developed, that's where the lease will be at least that much. It could be more, but it won't be below that amount. That was the intent. And then CPI would be applied every time. And then should property values increase, it doesn't go backwards. It's a one-way valve here we're talking about. If port properties increase over the years, the commission has the right to reassess that and take that 48 cents in this case up to 50 cents, 52 cents, whatever the new rate is. You're not going to reduce it.
Can we get back well, to everybody's talking about 48 cents as 0.0, it's 4.8 cents.
That's no, that's, we're talking about
an annual basis, yeah, right. Per square foot.
Well, so. To keep beating a dead horse for another couple of weeks, if the airport property value goes up, you can reestablish the rate. Is that what you're saying? Now, what about the airport property value going down?
We're not going to reestablish it. Right. That's been the philosophy of the commissioner since I've been here. Now, if they want to do that, that's their decision. I would not recommend that because our costs continue to go up for the airport. We used to be able to get reimbursement. The FAA used to pick up 90% of all the infrastructure costs, you know, related to the actual like runway, taxiways, et cetera. And the state would pick up another 5%, and we were only on the hook for 5%. Well, the state has bailed. They don't provide their 5%. So our costs have just gone up another 5% for every infrastructure related to the actual flying capabilities of the airport. And I'm telling you, the FAA, I just got this thing yesterday, you know, they're getting ready to close about a dozen airports in the state with contract towers.
Closing the towers.
Closing the towers. My correction. A lot of people are fighting that. And now they're saying they might not do that, but they still want that money out of the FAA. And they're going after the pot of money that they use to support general aviation airports. So if we want to continue the improvements, where that money is going to come from? It's going to come from the Port Commission deciding to spend it out of our general fund, which means now we've got more attendants paying for the airport. And guess what? The bigger crowd will be the next time in this room. It'll be the more attendants saying, why are we supporting the airport? We can't afford to go backwards. Right. I'm sorry. It's
just my question, I didn't look. I got the complete packet of stuff on a PDF file or whatever on the port. Now, is that airport the only profit center, whatever you want to call it, that's losing money?
No.
Colson's getting better with the new tenants down there.
Mm-hmm.
Are any of the other port facilities considered an essential public facility the way an airport is?
The airport is our only essential public facility under the law.
Okay, and then my other question, you guys recently redid the docks, I believe, down here and some docks at Point Hudson. Now, is there a federal boating administration that pays 90% of that stuff?
That was all out of our pocket. And we raised the mortgage rates.
Let's keep in mind that a boater pays 65 cents per square foot per month. 65 per month, so they pay a lot of money.
Well, they cost more than airplanes. Not a dinghy.
Well, I mean, we're kind of talking apples and oranges.
Yeah, it's hard to compare.
Right. So, I guess my bottom line, and kind of stirred this whole hornet's nest up, I wanted to see an equal rate applied to everybody. I feel, pardon my French, I feel like I'm kind of getting screwed, or other guys are getting screwed less than me, maybe. Sorry, ladies.
I've got balls to speak to you.
So, I would like to see, like I proposed, that average rate established and as a prevailing rate for everybody. And as a second proposal, a rate cap. I guess a rate cap isn't going to happen. I don't know why the average rate can't happen. But
Can I ask you a question about your average rate? I'm trying to gather all this in. And the way I understand it is if we said, all right, average rate is X, 42 cents or 45, whatever. But then your lease comes up and we have to apply the same amount to it, so we do, but someone else's lease doesn't come up until the next year, so then we apply the CPI to them, and so we can start off fresh with a nice average rate that everyone agrees is nice and happy and fair and equitable. We'll be that way for a year, and then as the leases come due, then they're going to get all out of sync again, if I'm not mistaken. Am I correct in that assumption?
Well, if I could address that, from what I've seen the last, 6 or 7 years, if not more, the CPI has generally been in the 1.5 to 2.5% range. Speaking of CPI increases, we had one applied to us last December, and it said CPI increased 2.8%, and I looked on the Bureau of Labor Statistics website, and it says change for the last 12 months, 2.3. And I asked Jim, and I asked Gene French about it, and he sent me a thing that had a bunch of figures circled and a little adding machine tape. Oh, yeah, it's 2.8. I mean, it says right on the website, change for the last 12 months, 2.3. It has the actual consumer price index numbers, and you do the math, and it's 2.3. Yet the port said it's 2.8. I asked, when I asked Tina about it, she said, I know what the numbers say. This is the way I've been told to do it. This is the way we do it, and I can't do it differently until I'm directed otherwise. I mean, now we're only talking 0.5%.
I think that's a solvable problem, and I hear you, and there is a solvable problem that Amy and I are working on, and that's doing an annual CPI in March for every.
That would
be fair.
It
doesn't matter if your lease was signed in October or whatever. That way, the CPI, that's an easy fix. The other fix is.
Because right now it runs with the date of your lease.
Yeah,
it's. So at end of year number isn't necessarily your number, your number, your number.
Then that would solve the problem you were just talking about.
Yeah. Well, and we were actually talking about this, not on, it wasn't the airport, it was actually Point Hudson leases.
Well, all leases.
Yeah, because the same policy for everybody. It's not just an airport issue. It's for everybody.
Well, I would say, you know, yeah, I would go along with that. But it would be nice if we even everybody's lease out now so everybody's on the same footing. I mean, we're talking, like I pointed out on here, 22% spread on everybody that's got the prevailing rate clause. And if you throw in Jeffco that doesn't, they've got some other scheme in theirs. It's a 37% spread. I was told the CPI increase, how was it put to me last year at the meeting? You get your lease at the prevailing rate, and the CPI increase goes every year to automatically compensate it to the what should be the new prevailing rate. So if I go down and got a lease on a hangar pad tomorrow, I shouldn't start at the 48 or whatever arbitrary number. I should start at that 48 plus what everybody else has had to pay on the deals.
$2 a foot infrastructure charge before we talk.
Okay.
So I got a question. What's the span of years over which these contracts have been signed?
27
couple
years.
Decades.
So in the course of 27 years, at various times, these different contracts have been signed.
I fully think that, and Gene and I worked on this, Gene French, a scenario where we can do what Eric says, but be prepared, there'll be twice as many people in the audience here going to raise their rates that are going to be upset. The model we looked at was our mortgage model, that is basically a 30-foot slip is a 30-foot slip and doesn't matter. It will take some doing, and you're going to have to raise some rates, and then every year we have a new rate. Rate for a 30-foot slip or an airplane hangar, whatever it is. It's doable, but you're going to have a lot of opposition.
Is there anybody here from J Hangar?
No.
That's a single owner.
Anybody here from ENR?
Who?
ENR.
That'd be you, yeah? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's the C building, correct?
Oh, you're talking.
You might want to change the name on that.
Not the C building.
No, ENR.
You're talking to D.
Or excuse me, D.
D.
That'd be Jeff.
Well, I'll tell you, you'll have Northwest Hangars here beating on your door.
Well, ENR would go up, Jay would go up, several others would go up.
So you can see we make $76,000 a year on leases.
Mm-hmm.
So that, now that does not include Jeffco because they have a different deal. It also does not include Jerry.
The Air Museum.
But other than that, this is all your leases. So in order to equalize that, and start at some $77,000, there would be a lot of people rated.
Is there a way to normalize this with the infrastructure charges that were paid in kind of up front and the infrastructure costs that the port has had on the airport as a whole or on these specific hangar groups to normalize in a cost so that you have a base rate and you have an offset and essential for infrastructure, and then this infrastructure charge that has been done is essentially fronted the port money to do that infrastructure work, so that should come back out of. I know it, I mean, it makes another couple of columns in the spreadsheet, but it probably is more rational than just saying, well,
know, throw everything out and start with fixed rate regardless of whatever else has happened.
We've got a couple things happening right now that really complicate the issue because we have half the pilots that want a non-precision approach. He's paid over $100,000 for. We have another half of the pilots that want an AWOS system. And I hear from the other side and says, well, what the heck are you spending that money for? We don't need an AWOS system. So when you look at the $150,000 we're going to put in the airport this year, there are a lot of pilots that don't think we should be spending.
And I'm doubting right now whether the FAA is going to come across on the AWOS. So if we are going to do that, it's going to come out of our pockets, which means it's coming out of the boat.
Actually, I can speak to that directly. I'm Steve Craig, a pilot out there. I've been in touch with the FAA. When I was employed by East Jefferson Fire, I was directed by all the fire chiefs in the area to communicate with the FAA and asked about that approach due to the fact that Airlift Northwest denied so many times into the airport.
Yeah, and I've talked to the Airlift Northwest.
So it was fully funded at my last talking to Mary. I know there's some mental positions in the FAA and she might have been.
We were supposed to, and to your point, Bill, last week was our published date for precision.
It ain't
published.
It sounds like May 2nd now. I think the published date that they cited in their paperwork was the date at which it could be flown by an FAA survey team. So every time they publish one of these things, they have to fly it before they actually send out the public.
But so the sequester could change all this.
I think we'll see it on May 2nd, but I think that gives the FAA time to actually fly the approach.
Excuse me, go ahead and try to mend your nails.
Let him go first.
Well, I'm going to back up about 7 issues ago.
Go ahead. Ma'am.
Larry had mentioned that other hangars weren't built after the L. The L, there was 3 other hangars without infrastructure costs that were built after have lower costs. Okay, I just wanted to make that for the record. Jim, you brought up that in March have everybody, regardless of the lease date, again, just to do this CPI in March, please make it October. Ours is in October. If you do it in March, we just have it in October, then you're really widening L hangar way out there. Just give us a break. That's all I'm asking. I agree with Eric's proposals. It's just, don't do this to us again. Do it in October, please.
In the back, please.
I just don't need that. Thank you.
I'm Steve Holmeson. I have a hangar C. And I agree with everyone's comments on the inequity of the lease, and I have the same concerns, so I won't restate them over and over. But on hangar C, and I have a rather old rent analysis, but they're mostly stated in square footage. We have 10,500 plus taxi, and I'm not entirely sure what that represents on this. And again, this is dated, it may have been corrected, but...
When the sea hangar was built, again, there's a whole paper trail. The sea hangar didn't want to wait for the FAA to pave their taxiway. So they said, we'll do it ourselves. And the Port Commission at that time said, well, do it yourself. Don't wait for the FAA. You're going to pay for it. It was agreed to. So, again, it just accentuates that each of these leases are different.
The question that the folks in our hangar had was, when it deteriorated, the port said it's our responsibility to pave it. And it is. If we own it, that there's a conflict there that they don't understand.
Well,
or is that just another sharp corner in the lease somewhere?
Well, it's when Larry came to me, my comment was, it's theirs. They're supposed to pave it themselves. But Larry said, we'll do it for you. So I would say that the port, again, stepped above and beyond its call of duty and said, it's yours, but we'll do it for you because it's for the airport.
Well, there's actually 2 hangars that include extra land or whatever. The ER hangar, which is the D building that Jeff owns, and that says including 1,800 foot of pad. And the C hangar, which is 4680 apron. Back when that market rent study was done in 2001, there was a lot of discussion about leases that included more than the actual footprint of the building, and there should be one rate for an apron, one rate for the building. And I thought it was agreed at that time to quantify all the lease rates based on the hangar footprint. That's not being done now.
Right.
What happened to that idea?
I only added that in there because if you didn't, it would really show an inequity. But there still is that additional payment they have to make somehow. So,
well, back up a second, because if you didn't show that, what did you say again?
Well, they're paying for that additional 1,800 square foot pad. So if I didn't include that in the square footage, their rent would be totally out of proportion. Because
well,
how would you account for that 1,800 square foot pad?
Well, my comment to that, it is totally out of proportion. If the rates should be quantified by footprint, let's quantify all the rates by footprint. I thought that was agreed long ago to do that.
I don't know who agreed to that. I don't know. That was built long before my time.
Well, I'm talking about the market. No, I'm not talking about what the actual lease includes. For example, the C building includes a taxiway. Obviously, they cannot build on there because aircraft, their own aircraft use it, plus them portables in the back use it. So you can't, I mean, I can't go out and build on the taxiway. Neither can they. I mean, it was when that was decided was long after that lease. It was in 2001 when this was all talked about on that market rent study. I got a big wad of paperwork and somewhere.
The sea hangers changed hands 3 times and went bankruptcy. Sea hangers been through a lot of issues. So
oh my God,
I think actually Sea Hanger was done after the present owners of Sea Hanger.
Well, there was an extension to the lease made that
well,
Martin got.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we can spend a couple of days here talking about each lease and all these individual particulars. We need philosophical guidance, I guess. You know, policy guidance. I don't know if you're really prepared to do that today. But.
No.
Lease.
Yes, and Steve?
I might also add that lease discussions do qualify for executive session.
Is it too late to add that for today's executive session?
We might just consider that. We have to call off for supper.
I also want to point out a few minutes ago, it was asked about the length of the leases. A-Hanger Condo has a 50-year lease. It started out as a 40, and part of the reimbursement for taxiway costs or something, we got an extra 10 years. I believe several of the other West Side hangars have 50-year leases. I don't know what the lease period is on the East Side ones. I mean, to me, once that first 50-year lease was written, that kind of established a precedent, but maybe that went by the wayside.
No one lease sets a precedent when it comes to term.
Sure, yeah, that's pretty apparent.
Well, why would we? It's, you know, every bill, every boat agent lease has got different terms. A lot of times at the request of the business owner. You know, we'll modify them to help them. A lot of them are broken up into 5-year options, 10-year options, that sort of thing. Airports under the RCW, under state law, are unique in that we're authorized to sign longer leases than we're capable. I don't think we have anything over 30 years here in the boat haven. And these are essentially the same kind of buildings that hangars are, you know, metal, steel-built buildings. And the whole thing, personally, I'm not comfortable with 50-year leases because what's the value of that building at the end of 50 years? It's probably negligible. Now, we have in our leases, you know, we have the right to either take over that building or tell you to remove it from our property. But 50 years, again, is a long time for most buildings. And we had one, I think, we declined because the engineer report said somebody came in on a 10-year extension of the sea hangar, and without significant improvements, the engineer said it wouldn't, you know, recommend we not, you know, give them the extension. So, but yeah, all leases, you know, the airport is more in common because the state law allows us to go up to 50 years, but you won't find any 2 leases in the other facilities like.
Another thing I wanted to address, you mentioned the instrument approach, the non-precision approach, or I'm a pilot, but I'm not an IFR pilot, and I looked at the approach online on the FAA website. It kind of looks like gibberish to me. From what I understand, it's 1,000-foot minimum. Basically, if you get down to 1,000 feet, you don't see the ground, you're not landing. And I question it, and as well as a lot of the other people question, what the usefulness is really going to be. Then as far as the AWOS goes, Part 91 pilot, which is a private operation, Part 91 pilot, or a Part 91 op, to the best of my knowledge, does not require an AWOS or ASOS on the field. They can use the information from NAS Whidbey or from Port Angeles. Aerolift Northwest, I believe, is a Part 135, Steve? Aero Medical Operation or something, and they need not just an AWOS, but I think that they require a certain grade of AWOS. There's AWOS 1, AWOS. And then from what Jeff told me recently, there has to be a certification every year to keep it current. And so I'm wondering if the port has factored that in. I don't know, that might be 20 grand a year to...
Isn't Port Townsend Aircraft Services a Part 135? PTA?
Yeah, they're not, well, they're not operating right now. Mm-hmm. Number one, and number two...
They haven't sent their certificate.
Well, they have a, they hold a certificate, but they're not actively using it. And number two, Part 135 can do instrument work if they meet a whole bunch of requirements. And none of the 135 operators, Port Townsend Aircraft, Island Air, West Wind, or whatever, none of them have the equipment to do it. You got to have redundant systems on the airplane and autopilots and a bunch of other junk. So basically all the 135 operators.
We're fully aware. We've had many conversations with AWOS. So
this is kind of getting off topic of the airport rate discussion, which is what we agreed to undertake today. About the only thing that we can do is we would like to maintain the lease income at the airport. So we could probably come up with a reworked rate structure that would maintain our lease income out there and have that for you to have a look at, if you wish.
Yep.
That would be the outcome of today's discussion. And we might have to have an executive session to discuss that one time before we present it to you. But if you wish, we would take that action.
Yeah, I'd like to see that.
Very well.
The average, and then like what Jim said, pick 1 month CPI, and it would apply to everybody's increase that occurred that calendar year.
And do
the month of the stay the same, correct?
Okay, fair enough.
I would like to task you all, meeting, whatever you want to say, a representative from every hangar. Because I want to make sure that everybody's on board with this, and we don't go down a path for five people and seven people beat us up.
Right.
But I would be happy to sit every hangar over, just a representative, and let's come up with a plan that works globally. And I'd be happy to present that to you.
I was not informed this was coming up, and I'm in the L hangar, and unless Eric had told me, I think the port should let everybody know this is a discussion and contact those persons involved. For that to happen, I don't think that's upon us to do that. When half the people we don't have names and addresses for, you're not going to give them to us because that's a breach of privacy act. I think the board should contact everybody.
Well, let's look at the numbers first and see.
Yeah, we'll look at the numbers.
You know, I get some legal questions I'd like to ask our attorney about.
Right, and we can contact Eric to set up our next. To let you know when we're going to have this.
I'd like to be contacted
work on,
too.
Yeah.
I just leave my.
We'll contact each of the representative, each hangar rep that we have on file.
As far as notification, I was wondering, it's pretty much off topic, but several years ago there was a port quarterly newsletter that started, and I got a couple of them, and then it skipped a year or two, and I got another one. Is that even going on anymore?
It's been going on for several years now.
Yeah.
So is that sent out? We used to get it with our...
2 a year now.
Excuse me?
We only do 2 a year now.
Okay, because I haven't seen one in quite a while. Is that sent out to the...
Everybody that gets a bill.
Everybody that gets a bill from us.
Yeah.
And if you, if you're not getting a, like, I haven't gotten one for a long time because I'm a boat ramp user. So I have to keep coming in and making sure that my name stayed on the list. Because I think, so if you're the president of the Hangar Association and you get the bill, the guys in your hangar that they don't get directly billed from the port might not be on that list. So that list, need, if you get a bill, you get it. But if you don't get a bill, you need to, like, ship
them. Well, I can't recall the last one I seen, and I tried looking online and read.
November was our last one. It is online there. Yeah.
And we have, we're meeting next week on the May 1, so there'll be one coming out in May.
I guess our bill is so big, there isn't room for the newsletter.
And one of them, the community one, put in the leader.
Yeah, we handed out the leader.
In the county.
So, Eric, we'll work with you. We'll get you the
information. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
So, we do need to move this meeting on. We have quite a bit more business to do today, including executive session. So thanks for your input, you guys.
Thank you.
And all three of us have email addresses and phone numbers.
Okay, so, they're posted on the website.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead, sir, in the back. Did you have one more comment?
I just said, as far as the website, you might change the address of the meetings, because I was over milling around the Hudson Street.
This is only the second meeting we've had in here. Yeah.
We will. I was going to apologize for walking in late.
Actually, I thought I had changed it on all pages of the website.
Yep. If any of you want to come down for a cup of coffee, you know where I live. For the year, anyway.
Swear it. You mean your car's off light on.
Mobile here. I think after today's executive session. Starbucks really good.
Yeah, it wouldn't work. Yeah,
maybe I should make some
cost versus benefit.
I haven't seen that many pilots in Jefferson County since I moved here at one place.
I thought there were a few.
Thank you, gentlemen and ladies.
See you guys.
Do you guys want?
No. Nah. Moving on to the root problem update.
I sent it to you. I had Katie Bigelow, tree expert, come last Friday. She was very quick. She did a good assessment. Larry Ozzie was there, Jerry Kyle, Guy Sands was there, Kent Clove from the City of Public Works was there. She inspected the trees. We showed her the damage to the foundation and the floors in the brewery building. And she sent us the report Monday, and I forwarded that on to you. Her recommendation is to cut the roots. And I've already given Ozzy instruction to go ahead and do a trench, just get the backhoe and trench it, and get the appropriate plastic barrier that she calls out in her report to keep the roots from growing back. But she was also very clear, and I've talked to Ken Klo, that this is maybe a 10-year fix. That
right.
At some point, these trees, the poplars, what we're talking about along Sims Way, they're not a long-lived tree. In fact, when she whacked a couple of them with her rubber mallet, it indicated that they're starting to rot on the inside.
Sounded like my transfer.
Yep. And so she said there needs to be a plan in place to start replacing the poplars with some other species that will not be so troublesome in the future. And Ken Klo from the city and I, we need to duke it out as to who owns the trees. The parcel map that I look at shows the trees on city property, and I'm sticking with that. So if he could find a better one to serve his case, he's welcome. But that's kind of where we stand, so we'll go ahead and get it trenched and keep any more damage from happening.
Yeah, it sounds like a good plan for now.
There are bumper stickers still out that say save poplars, so it's already started.
I mean, new ones?
Well,
there's bumper stickers from when they did the courthouse.
Yeah, they cut some poplars.
Oh, that's right.
The same issue as tearing apart the sidewalks and the streets.
Well, that arborist report was fairly succinct. I mean, they even gave it a rating.
Yeah.
And they are right next to the power lines.
Well, and that was a big thing. She talked about using the military term of high-value targets.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got the high power lines. This is all power feeding Fort Townsend. You got the main telephone cables right there on the other side. Plus, you've got all the traffic on Sims Way if these trees start coming down.
Pedestrians,
a few of those. So. But we're moving out on that, and this is what it is.
So let's just keep arm wrestling with the city to get them to establish ownership, and they can be the bad guys. Moving on, item C, old business, no discharge zone.
I think I emailed that to you. I don't know if I sent the latest copy to Dave.
Yeah, you did send. Well, Dave might have not had
here's it. I got another email today. I sent you both another one with the latest draft from the Washington Boating Alliance. There's a meeting tomorrow over at Elliott Lake Arena with Washington Boating Alliance and all the players. To go over this to finally get, you know, the whole consortium's approval to the wording. This has been changed a half a dozen times. You know, some wanting it a little more in your face, others want to be a little more gentle. But I think this is pretty much what's going to go forward. And when I went back at lunchtime today, I had a voicemail from Johan down at WPPA. Wanted to talk to me about this because WPPA feels they need to send their own letter. And a lot of the confusion is whether or whether there's not a comment period.
Right.
And they're really, from what DOE told us when we went to Bellevue for the meeting last week, is that there is not. That the comment period will be a federal comment period from the EPA if they decide to go ahead with the federal designation for no discharge zone. The state doesn't have that authority.
They've already made up their mind.
That's what the letter says.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you read that letter, Steve?
Yeah. So I have a question regarding, I was just thought, didn't think about this, so I was talking to Dave, and when it says sound, does it mean everything from Hood Canal or there south? So it doesn't include Admiralty Inlet or?
Oh, it's everything, all the way out to the Straits.
So in other words, it's not just Puget Sound, it's geographically.
It's the whole thing. All the San Juans.
Out the Straits of Juan de Fuca.
All the way up to the ocean. And to the international border, they can't affect the Canadian side. Now, one of the things that we proffered to DOE when we met with them was, because they kept bringing up, well, you know, these boats are sailing across shellfish beds and polluting the shellfish beds. And I said, well, there's two things wrong with that analysis. One, they're not sailing across the shellfish beds because there ain't no water there half the time. You know, those are real shallow, and when they put keel, you're not going to see across there. And I said, you're going into this with the assumption, and it was this lady's name that's on there, Amy, forget her last name, that everybody's dumping it at that exact point. And I said, you know, most of our boaters, you know, are day sailors. You know, they'll go out, spend a few hours sailing and enjoying boating, then they come back in, they use the pump out, they use our upland facilities, restrooms, etc. And the assumption that every boat is out there every day dumping is, you know, totally false. But that's the perception that, and none of these are boaters at DOE. We got to try to overcome somehow. So. But anyway, I think they're still going to do the petition in September to the EPA to declare it a no discharge zone for all of Puget Sound. We'll see where it goes.
Yeah, which in effect will create another layer of bureaucracy for regulating the environmental.
They have no idea how to enforce it yet.
The toilet monitors.
Yeah, well, the first thing they'll do is they'll hire staff. And then they will impose fees on recreational boating. So letting this go forward is like giving best wishes for more fees to recreational boating. So it's going to cost money.
That's all I have on that topic.
Any comments, Dave?
Well, I was just... What options do we have to do input on this?
Well, we've got the WPPA.
And WPPA, I'll call Johan when I get back.
So that's all the public
at this level, you know.
They're taking.
Yeah. They said that they've done their outreach to the stakeholders by meeting with us.
Yeah.
The DOE has?
DOE.
Yeah.
That was their comment to us a week ago Monday at their Bellevue office.
Really?
I brought that up. I said, I can't believe it's not a public comment period. And she said, we're not required. Because this is really a federal process, not a state process.
Who, in fact, are the stakeholders then?
Well, if we hadn't pushed our way through the door, we probably never would have had a meeting.
But I mean, they must have an idea.
You know, if they
identify some stakeholders, I'd like to know who they were.
I don't think they've gone that far.
No, they won't. There are no stakeholders identified, Dave. Next thing on the agenda is the administration building bids.
We had our bid opening last Thursday at 1 p.m. We had five bidders, and we had a apparent low bidder, and we're still in the due process. However, since then, within the required time, we had a formal protest from the next bidder. And so I think we need to discuss this with our attorney in executive session and get some guidance. And
then after the executive session, we will come back into a regular session and make a decision on this matter?
Yep.
Very well. That will happen shortly. Moving on. Commercial Basin update.
Jim?
We had a meeting, actually in this room, Tyke and I and Larry Ozzie. We had 11 prospective bidders come in for the Commercial Basin project. We went through all the specifications, all the requirements, and then actually toured the Commercial Basin. It was an interesting meeting in that three of the bidders that I really respect came up and asked Larry Ozzie and I and Tyke, why are we doing this? They feel that the Commercial Basin has far exceeded its useful life. Their comment was is that it's going to be a very expensive Band-Aid. The reason is, and I'm not saying we shouldn't go ahead, make sure the commission is aware of what's happening. The bids are going to probably come in between $500,000 and $700,000 in that range to do the work we're requesting. The issue is, back in 1972, docks were put in. They were put in with light aggregate concrete, which is not used anymore. And it's basically rotting. It's rotting from the inside out. The inside foam is not closed cell foam. It's been saturated with water. Our spec called for 14 inches of freeboard, and we got down there, and we've got some areas that have 11 inches of freeboard. There's no way we're going to bring up that far. So basically, they identified that we can do it, but we don't know if you're going to get 10 years on it. So we need to go in eyes wide open. The bid opening is next Thursday, the 21st. We'll see what kind of numbers we get. Tyke and I met after, and neither one of us, even though we go down there a lot, remember them in that kind of shape.
You know, when you get, well, you know, these contractors which have a more critical eye, you know, suddenly, oh, geez, yeah, you're right.
Well, they would ask questions like, well, when I take this triangle, you know, each finger is triangle, when I pick this up, are the frames going to be okay? Tyke and I go, we don't know. I mean, so we could get into this, like renovating an old Victorian. You open the wall and you go, oh, shoot, now what do I do? So what Tyke and I believe we should do is get our bids, see where we're at, and see if we have any confidence that we can do it. The problem we have, and we talked to our engineering firm, MC Squared, we can't do part of it. You know, if we put the eight piles we're going to drive out there, right now the wood piles have a lot of flex. Mm-hmm. Wind blows, they flex. If we put steel piles there, like we're permitted to do, we feel that the interior of the marina will break apart in a big wind. So those big boats are going to just start crushing it because those piles aren't going to get.
Yeah, we had the same issue with the old AB dock, even though it was well past its useful life. Everything was so loosey-goosey in the big storms, everything kind of just went with the flow, and we had to replace the whole thing to start over again.
So. It wouldn't be bad, but they're all large boats, and they're all broadside.
Yeah.
So, you know, A, B, C, and D are all into the wind. There's prevailing rates, but you get a 70-foot boat out there broadside to the wind, and if you get a 50-mile-an-hour wind at high tide, it's not going to be pretty. So we're kind of, we've got to do something. I think we just need to wait until Thursday and see what bids are going to be. We estimated if we were to go to a system like AB Dock, you know, wood floats, it would be about $1.6 million to just redo the commercial basin.
As is, with everybody tied up broadside to the wind.
Yeah, the same configuration, just
but, new stuff. But, you know, with the county devaluation and other things, our bonding capacity is really diminished. So I don't think we can get a bond for the money.
For $1.6 million?
Yeah. So that's kind of one of the issues. So I just wanted you to be aware of what Tyke was going to be here, but I guess he didn't make it.
Huh.
Let you know. You see him around, you can ask him his opinion.
Is it possible to get a copy of the specifications that we present?
It's on the website, but I can get you a printed copy. Yeah.
Put it in your box tomorrow.
Do you have a big drawing of it, Sue? You have a big drawing of it? It's hard to read the small drawing. I think you have a big rolled up drawing. Check out. There were 11 people, and I've been talking to four of them that I know four of them have been, and they're all big. They're Culbertson, who built AB Dock, Orion, who built our thing, Quick Brothers, who did the demo work on our old hall. Good.
Yeah, these guys all know what they're doing. So,
yeah.
And remember, part of the contract will be to get rid of the transfer span down at the old Quincy docks here.
Moving on to new business. Point Hudson reservation policy.
Commissioner Tucker.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys remember the report I gave about 2 years ago about value of fishing and fishermen and fishing dollars in our economy because of our close proximity to excellent fishing. And I think that it's kind of based on that that we decided to go ahead with the extra boat ramp so that we wouldn't be, so we could capitalize on our place in the Sound for good fishing. And so we're spending a bunch of time and effort to do that. And also the port's been active recently in being a part of fishing derbies and so forth. And I was feeling pretty good about that. You know, the fact that we're trying to, because believe me, I can attest that fishermen bring in a lot of money to the city when they come fishing. And then to my surprise, some people came back from a PSA, which Puget Sound Anglers is the main fishing club in the area. They had their state meeting, and a contingent of folks came from Fort Townsend and attended that. And at the end, there was a plea from the president of PSA imploring everyone to figure out an alternative place besides Port Townsend to hold fishing derbies because the place is so impossible to deal with. And of course, one of the people that was attending there said he felt it was horrified, and he felt embarrassed to have been from Port Townsend because the guy was saying, "Help us figure out how to get to CQ or Anacortes or any place else." And so I thought, oh my God, this is a really bad thing for the whole state to be hearing from the president of the Puget Sound Anglers. So I called him up and asked him what his problem was. And apparently we have some issues with reservations and I'm not wanting to call it sacred cows, but events that are hold preeminence over anything else that we don't all know about. I didn't know about anyway. But more to the point, the fact that things could get so out of hand that these people are so frustrated that they just feel they have to go someplace else, and there's some man they didn't want to call back. So I guess the point is that, or I should say some of the specifics are, they tried to rent, and they wanted to get about 35 or 40 slips for in Point Hudson on the day that halibut season opens. And halibut season openings are determined by Fish and Wildlife, not by the second Sunday of the month or whatever. It's Fish and Wildlife determines it. So they can have a fishing derby only when the season is here. Well, it so happens that that coincides with the
Race to the Straits.
The, yeah, what's it? The Sloop Tavern. The Sloop Tavern, what do they call it? Sloop Tavern something,
rather. Yacht Club, Race to the Straits.
Sloop, yep. Sloop Tavern Yacht Club.
It's an annual 100 sailboats.
Not being a yachty, I have no idea what the Sloop Tavern Yacht Club is. I'd never heard of it. And I've been in town for a very long time, and I'm very familiar with things that we hold sacred, like the boat festival. And I understood that if someone wanted to have a fishing derby in town and rent some slips at Point Hudson during the wooden boat festival, they'd be out of luck. Of course, they'd realize that because the staff would tell them that the wooden boat festival has taken over everything, and there's not a place for a toothpick, let alone a 24-hour boat. But to the people that had the... they were trying to book spots for their fishing derby, the Sloop Tavern Yacht Club sounded a lot like the Gooey Duck Tavern fishing derby. In other words, there is a Gooey Duck Tavern fishing derby. There's about 25 boats will show up. It's just a small thing. And so they had no idea what the Sloop Tavern Yacht Club was. It was a big deal. They didn't realize that the Sloop Tavern Yacht Club came up and took over the entire Point Hudson, nor were they ever informed of that. What they were informed of was that the way to get slips is to come down on January 2nd at 8 o'clock in the morning, but be here early because there's a sign-up sheet on the door that you were here earlier than that, and have someone sit out in their car, freezing to death, and put up a little thing that you can then sign up for slips. So they did that. They sent a guy over from somewhere on the other side of the water, early in the morning on January the 2nd to sign up. And he signed up, and he signed up for several days' worth of slips. You know, signed up. It was very clear that what slips he wanted and for how long. Well, according to some screw-ups, and the screw-ups, I understand, happened. And it was with apparently two different sets of people trying to do the reservations and so forth. They thought they were getting Saturday night. They didn't get Saturday night. Sloop Tavern got it instead. And when they called the check on it, they were being made to do things like provide everyone's address, phone number, credit information, all kinds of stuff to be able to rent their slip. But when they checked about the Sloop Tavern, it just Sloop Tavern carte blanche. And so they felt that they'd been coming out here supporting the port for years and trying to get the facilities for years and create a fishing derby here that would be a universal draw, and they felt they were being again being set up against the Sloop Tavern, who they, as far as I knew, just some old tavern in Seattle that wanted to have a yacht race here, and they had some other problems too that. Like not being able to take a camper off his pickup to do a weigh-in and not having a place for a weigh-in, for example. There was they weren't allowed a place to have a weigh-in. So I guess the thing is that we need to, if we're trying to attract the fishermen and we're going to the expense of putting another boat ramp in to do just that, we need to make sure we're not making them mad on the other end. And I'm trying to figure out a way to, if in fact the Sloop Tavern Yacht Club is a big deal, like a big enough deal like the Wooden Boat Festival, then we need to make that known to everyone and let them know that coming down here on January the 2nd ain't going to prevail against it.
Let's say that we could accommodate everybody who came, one way or another, which we probably could. There would be empty slips and, yeah.
But we are. The thing's not till the first week in May.
And if somehow we could do it without irritating Sloop Tavern race or the fishermen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what we're looking for, right?
That's what we're after.
Okay, how do we do that?
I don't know. But here's another aspect that also bears looking into. And that is that there's another fishing derby that the same group is having here on April the 6th. That's coming up. It's in 3 weeks. And they wanted to have some more slips down at the Boat Haven. I'm sorry, at the Point Hudson, which is fine. We have plenty of room. but they also have some people that trailer down here, wanted to put their boats in the boat haven and then stay in a motel and be near their boats. And they were told that they couldn't reserve space in the boat haven. They had to go to Point Hudson. And of course, their boat is here and their truck is here.
It's been poor policy for decades.
Right, and that's understandable. Yeah. And so that might be something that we might need to revisit, because in order to do what Dave just suggested, in order to accommodate the Sloop Tavern and what has traditionally been the same weekend as the opening day of halibut season, in order to accommodate all that, we may need to change the policy so that reservations can be done here to accommodate the huge influx, which is what we're after, of fishing boats to come down here and be able to slips and be sure they're going to be able to stay here. People are going to come up here from who knows where across the state on this thing. Well, I might have room for you. Or so the fact that people want to stay in Boat Haven by their truck and by their hotel.
So what kind of policy would you suggest? I mean, what would it sound like?
Well, it would probably be allowing reservations in Boat Haven, number one. And number two, the thing that made people so mad, Jim did yeoman service trying to get it fixed. The fix ended up bringing a bunch of people down here, which our first policy I just mentioned would probably cure. But the second thing was, is that I'm not sure Jim, well, apparently he didn't indicate the fact that he went above and beyond the call of duty to accommodate these folks, but they didn't realize that they were trying to buck something that was so big as the Sloop Tavern. If he'd let them know that, which I'm going to let them know as soon as I finish with these deliberations, what they were trying to get into was something that apparently should have been told to them was reserved and has been going on for 10 years, and it takes up the whole place, and good luck trying to get it. You might have to go someplace else. Had they known that in the first place, they would have probably appreciated Jim's efforts more than they, since they didn't know that, and they went ahead and were all mad and trying to go someplace else. So in other words, I think it's the follow-up and the changing the policy so that we can get some reservations here in the Boat Haven to accommodate all.
So how do we do that?
Make a policy that we can accommodate people here in the Boat Haven.
This is the Boat Haven is all our permanent moorage and our marine trade dedicated slips.
Right, but there's empty holes.
But
all over the place.
Yeah, if you come in
3 months from now, we won't know.
We don't know where the empty holes are. We don't know whether marine trade's going to have a boat in there. We don't know if the porch guy is going to be out sailing. Yeah, we can't make a reservation because we don't. It's like having a hotel that is all, you know, rented out, you know, a year at a time, and somebody wants to stay there. We say, well, sometimes Joe and, room number 14 is, you know, goes away for a week. We could let you stay in there, but we don't know if he's going to be gone that week, and there might be some other room, and there may not be any room. So it's really
well, the fishermen aren't too concerned. In fact, the fishermen wouldn't mind rafting, and I'm thinking that if we could raft them two or three deep on the very part of the linear dock all the way up, that would be something that we could say, well, we'll just make sure that there's space on
the linear dock. Is free, and if we know it's going to be free.
Well, we could just make every attempt to accommodate.
Yeah, but if we don't, and they come from Seattle, that's not going to be pretty.
Well, they come with boats on trailers. You know, they get some
of them. You know, it's interesting. This fishing derby's got a lot of boats that are coming on their own bottoms.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a 32-foot boat that's coming from Seattle, and it better have a spot when it gets here, or it's not going to be happening.
However you get here, you plan for a weekend of fishing, and you get here, and there's no place to tie your boat up. Probably annoying.
Well, yeah, I kind of got a different take on what's going on here than you do, Steve. We have a person that takes reservations. She's got a harbor master that's her boss. The harbor master has Jim, who's her boss, and Jim has Larry, who's his boss. This misunderstanding we have on this moorage thing was a reservation issue. It's Larry's fault. Larry did not perform. The chain of command collapsed, and this huge misunderstanding came about because Larry didn't do his job. End of story. You know, as far as changing the reservation policy in the port, in the Boat Haven, perhaps that can be accommodated more easily with our new marina management software. I think we need to take a look at that. But it hasn't been indicated before as possible because it's just too much of an administrative nightmare, you know. But this mortgage mix-up thing is Larry Crockett's fault. End of story.
I take the responsibility.
Yeah, because the chain of command failed miserably in the worst possible way in the public eye, failed, you know. An entity that's been coming here for 10 years, if the person that's making reservations doesn't know that, then their leadership has failed them. It's not their fault. It's their leadership. It's a leadership issue. And that's what needs to be rectified in the Port of Port Townsend. Right on down the line, every single issue you mentioned is a leadership issue that needs to be rectified by proper leadership, chain of command. The building blocks of a good organization need to be repaired because they're broken. That's my take on this issue. Any further questions?
So, if granted, there's a long chain of responsibility for this, but at the root, if XYZ Sailing Club has a reservation, how does that? I mean, did this yacht club not have a reservation in the reservation system?
There is no real reservation system.
One of the problems is the reservation system isn't open all the time. You can't make a reservation for 2013 until the beginning of 2013. You can't call in and, you know, December 12th and say, I'd like to make a reservation.
Group reservations.
Yeah, you can't make a reservation for 2013. So...
it's not a very accommodating system.
I think we need to rethink our whole reservation system from the get-go.
Well, we are.
This new marina system might help us do that. Get a good.
Well, we had talked already about changing the policy. Instead of a reservation of $7, which causes a lot of voters' angst too for Point Hudson, is we go to a hotel-type reservation where you want to come in the first weekend of May on Friday. You're paying for Friday night up front.
The rethinking of the reservation system is
lost as
a process right now. It really is.
And one of the other issues with the fishing derbies that we talked about is Fish and Wildlife. You know, have they even announced one May or the first week in May is going to be the opening season yet?
I just looked this morning, it still says to be announced.
Right. Yeah. Now, see, this is where you have to talk to the fishermen. I go to those season setting meetings and, we don't know this, but it's not officially that, but I go to the halibut season setting meetings where they get the recommendations from the halibut fisheries guys. They make the recommendations, then those recommendations go to the commission, and they've always followed those recommendations in the past. And those dates have been set for the last 3 weeks. And so I have those dates, but the reason I'm not posted yet is because the commission hasn't blessed them.
See, because like with the race to the Straits, they're already planning the first weekend in May for 2014.
Right.
They've been coming here for a
decade. But they can't make a reservation until...
Well, unless we treat them like the Wooden Boat Foundation or the Wooden Boat Festival, where we just automatically block out that weekend because it is such a...
We have to treat everybody the same. I mean, we have to...
That is the crux.
Well, that means we're not going to block out the first weekend after Labor Day?
No, if they call and make a reservation, if they called 2 years ago and wanted a reservation for that time, they should have a reservation for that time.
Did we or did we not block out that weekend for the race to the Straits?
We did.
That's what I thought.
It was unblocked.
Now, did my staff screw up? My staff screwed up. They should not have taken reservations that weekend.
And the staff has known over a number of years, the race to the Straits has been coming here every year for a number of years.
12 years.
Yeah. That's why I sent that thing to email that thing to you. You know. But
I still see no excuse for the situation that we're in. These are great excuses, and you had some wonderful ones when we talked previously, but I don't buy them.
Yeah.
it is what it is. And my recommendation is we block out the first weekend in May next year for the Race to the Straits.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, if we...
It's 100 sailors. These are major sailors.
Yeah, but if we allow any other organization to make a reservation at any time, if they want to make a reservation for next year, then they should be able to do it now.
If they're of a significant nature.
Well, who decides significant? You know,
right,
like you look significant, but you know, you don't look very significant.
I'm willing to take that responsibility. I think I have that responsibility in my delegation of authority.
Well, neither of these players are insignificant.
No, actually, the fishing folks come by on more than one time a year. In other words, the Race to the Straits is here one day.
For years, we held the Discovery Bay Salmon Derby. Got out of our way to, you know, we waived fees. We've been doing that for over a decade. You know, we show our way to support the fishing. This one is, you know, a perfect storm for that first weekend in May.
This will cost the port $7,000, just so you know. We had to evict 19 monthly guests out of Point Hudson to accommodate. So $7,000 in revenue will be down because of accommodating 15 fishermen. We can make the case that these 15 fishermen are going to bring a lot of money to the commission, to the community, but we, in order to accommodate them, we kicked out our monthly guests out of Point Hudson. There's no other option.
The 15 fishermen.
No.
For the 50, oh, for...
To accommodate.
To accommodate the 15 fishermen, all monthly guests in Point Hudson will have to leave the table. Normally keep until June 1. But we sent letters out kicking them out. So that monthly revenue for all of those boats in Point Hudson is gone for one day, where the 15 fishermen are going to come in on Saturday, and then the rest of the month it's going to be empty. That was the only way we could accommodate it. So we just got to know that that's a big loss.
It seems like Moorage could accommodate 15 fishing boats.
Not with 110 boats coming in the marina.
In the Point Hudson.
Point Hudson.
They have a meeting room. There's no place to have a meeting room here.
This is a meeting room.
For a party? We don't rent it out for parties that I know of.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, those are the issues, and you're right. You know,
there are some other details, you know, the paperwork that in the...
But I mean, yeah, I know if I came in here with 15 outboard boats or inboard outboard boats, that there would be places to,
right,
to tie up.
They might be scattered. Well,
you're tied up.
They didn't want to be scattered, you know. But you know, the paperwork that was filled out said they were all departing on Saturday. We said, boy, it's not a problem because Sloop Tavern doesn't come in till Saturday night. And then departs on Sunday. But it ends up, that's not what the guy, he wrote it down 25 times that they're departing on Saturday, but it really meant Sunday. That was part of the confusion too at the staff level. We get your point.
15 boats, the way I understood it, there was going to be like 25 to 30.
15 are staying Saturday night. There was, for Thursday through Friday.
He had a lot of them that were leaving on
Saturday. They were all going out fishing and leaving. 15 coming for Saturday.
So in other words, then,
this is the excuse for it.
It's not just 15 boats coming in for this weekend. There's going to be like 30 or so boats.
Right, there's 35 total reservations.
Right.
But we're talking about the Sloop Tavern race is going to displace 15 boats.
The bottom line is we've accommodated everybody.
And given them a meeting.
Right, but in the process, we made them mad that they didn't realize that we accommodated everyone with this. And I didn't even know until this now. This is going to cost an extra $7,000. I'm sure they don't know that. And what they need to understand is that from us, that we're actually not anti-fishing and pro-yachty. We're actually for everyone, and that we work like crazy to get them in here, and that we'll, and they don't understand that yet. They still think that we were against them, we were trying to get our pals in from the yacht club. And that's why they wanted to go someplace else. And we need to communicate that to them somehow.
I will call the president.
Moving on, approval of warrants. They're here, Steve. That's the minutes.
Okay, we have warrant number 5,632 through 50,661. the amount of $38,098.75 for payroll, $50,662 through $50,670, the amount of $66,355.51 for payroll benefits, and $50,671 through $50,734 in the amount of $84,263.34 for accounts payable. I move the warrants be approved as read.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Next is staff comments.
Carol?
The only thing, I did talk to State Parks about our Fort Warden property, and their suggestion, I think it's a good one, the whole issue about the PDA is still up in the air with State Parks. If, in fact, the PDA goes forward, State Parks' recommendation would be to include our property in the PDA boundaries at Fort Warden. Because part of the agreement to establish the PDA is that the Discover Pass will not be required within that boundary. And so that would essentially solve our problem. Now, if the PDA doesn't go forward, then we agreed that we need to sit down with State Parks and look at some other options. Whether it's designating a certain parking lot, you know, that only users of our beach could use. The guy didn't really he had the map that I had sent, parcel map, but he didn't understand that it's like an 80-foot bluff there. He said, well, why can't they just park right up here and just walk over? And I said, no, you can't do that. So, and also the city has eliminated all the parking, if you remember, right there adjacent to Fort Warden, so people were
driving
off the cliff and crowding the little suburb there, so. And there's a, the other thing is David King called me yesterday, wanted to know if he should go to Tacoma later this month for the Working Waterfront Conference. There's a 4-day conference. Sea Grant is part of the sponsorship. It's a nationwide conference. It's the first time it's been in the Northwest. And it's only been held 2 or 3 times, I think. And I looked at the agenda. I wasn't planning on going. It's a very expensive one. For hotel and 4 days of conference, you can sign up for a Saturday. I told David King to check the agenda if he wanted to go down. That's up to him and the city. But I don't know if any of you had heard about it or planned to go.
I looked at the agenda, but it didn't seem like there was anything in there to.
It doesn't get down to our level. You know, it's really at the national level. Some big speakers, but. I'm not sure it'd be worth, hundreds of dollars of registration fee to go down there and sit all day. So that's all I have.
Public comments.
Hi, David Griswold, and I'm here to speak on Mark Grant's behalf. As you know, you're going to be going to executive session. Mark Grant was one of the low bidders, the second low bidder. First of all, before I go any further, I just want to mention that our Township Rights Co-op is one of the subcontractors Mark does grant for the bid. So I just want to be upfront with that. But having said that, I'd be up here anyway. The reason being is because I think Mark Grant has done an admirable job of putting a bid together with all local. It's not something that he had to do, but it's something that he chose to do, and it's his philosophy, I believe. It's one that he did with the Aero Museum, one that he did with our building, and other contractors here in town as well, or other customers here in town. So anyway, I just want to put that out there. That means a lot to our community. I know in this room we've spoken a lot about economic development and trying to keep the local dollars local. And I just want to highlight that point that I think Mark has done an admirable job here. And even though he's put in a protest on this, I hope you don't hold that against him. And you look at the greater picture of this is a local effort. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Dave.
Any further public comments? Mark?
Yes. I'm Mark Grant, Grant Steel Building. First of all, thank you, Dave, for your kind words. I think my proposal and subsequent letters speak for themselves. And I just want you guys to know this is not only about Grant Steel Buildings and my employees. This is about all local trades that we are going to support in the process of doing this project. I think it's important for the port to take a look at your mission statement. This is one of those cases where I really think that the port's mission statement has an impact on your decision making with regard to this matter. And that's it. Again, thank you.
Commissioner comments. Dave, anything?
No, after a lively meeting, you know, I'm pretty well worn out.
Yeah. Steve?
I'm done.
Yeah, and I think I've said my two bits too, so I think we'll move on. Our next meeting is going to be Wednesday, March 27th in our new commission building here at 333 Benedict Street at 6:30 p.m. And we're going to adjourn into an executive session now pursuant to RCW 42.30.110G.
And possibly C.
And then we will come back into regular session to make a decision on the discussion during the executive session. So this commission meeting is adjourned.
How long?
Oh my.
Action expected now.
Yeah. It's going to be.
You should ask her how long, I suspect, right?
Maybe 15 minutes or 20.
How long is it?
It's going to be probably an hour, I would guess.
All three topics?
Yeah.
And is action expected? Yeah.
We're going to take action. We're going to come back into regular session and take action on that in regular session. Adjourned.